Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how many people around the world took Discovering Ashkenaz, YIVO's first online course, and where were they from? The YIVO Institute for Jewish Research, based in New York, is dedicated to fostering knowledge of the ongoing story of Jewish life with a focus on the history and culture of East European Jewry. We spoke with Jonathan Brent, its executive director, about the history of the organization and their exciting new project, online courses that are open to everyone around the world.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Jonathan. Could you first tell us briefly about YIVO? I know this is hard to do. Its history and what the organization does.
YIVO was founded in 1925 by scholars in Eastern Europe who understood that the Jewish past was beginning to disappear in the modern world, and that in order to retain a memory of it, they needed to undertake an effort to collect as much of the material of Eastern Europe as they possibly could. But in addition to simply collecting material and making a museum, they understood that this huge civilization that had lasted about 1,000 years was virtually unknown to the majority of the Jewish people of Eastern Europe. They really had no knowledge of their own history. There were far more Jews who were studying the history of Germany and the history of France and the history of Poland and Russia than there were Jews who were understanding their own history. And this seemed to be an urgent matter, not only for the purpose of maintaining what Shimon Dubnov calls collective consciousness of the Jews as a people, but also for the purpose of presenting the Jewish population of Eastern Europe, which was at the time close to 7-8 million people, presenting them as a nation. And after World War I, this would entitle them to special privileges under the Minorities Treaty that was signed at Versailles. So there were a couple of reasons for this. But in any case, in the course of time from 1925 to 1940, YIVO amassed the largest archive and library pertaining to the history of East European Jewry in the world. And when the Nazis came, they did not destroy all of this material. Instead, they realized what they had here in YIVO, and they decided to seize and appropriate as much of it as possible so that after the war, they would use this material in the Museum of the Extinct People that was planned for Prague, and also for the Institute for the Study of the Jewish People that was planned for Frankfurt.
You're speaking about Vilna, right?
Yes, YIVO in Vilna.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why at the conclusion of the war, the U.S. Army came upon this warehouse outside of Frankfurt, Germany, in Offenbach, and there discovered millions of documents and tens of thousands of YIVO's books, which they then sent to YIVO, which had reestablished itself, its headquarters in New York City in 1941.
And since then, what has YIVO done in New York?
Well, since then, in New York City, YIVO has continued to amass more and more and more documentation. And now our library is some 400,000 volumes, and our archive is somewhere between 23 and 24 million documents. It's really quite huge. We keep adding materials from all over the world that have to do with East European Jewry, Russian Jewry as well. and the dispersal of that population around the world. So, in fact, our materials come from China, from Latin America, from all throughout Europe. We have the largest Ladino archive in North America, for instance. We have materials in 12 different languages.
But there is YIVO in different locations. It's not just in New York anymore. Isn't that true? Because I interviewed Sylvia Hansman, who was the Director of Cultural Heritage at YIVO in Buenos Aires a couple of years ago.
Yes. The YIVO in Buenos Aires was started, I believe, in the late 1920s or 1930s. Not long after it was started in Vilna. And in fact, you're quite right. In the 1920s and 30s, YIVO had a Warsaw office, it had a Berlin office, it had a London office, it had a New York office, it had a Chicago office, it had a Buenos Aires office. And all of these different YIVOs, because YIVO was more like a mass movement than just a building and an archive and a library. It was a real movement among the Jewish people of Eastern Europe, wherever they were. And unfortunately, the only elements of this global structure that survived the war was New York and Buenos Aires. And there's a small organization in Chicago right now, but the London branch of YIVO disappeared, Berlin, obviously, Warsaw, obviously. What we are intent on doing now is opening an office in London, a new office in London. We've just received permission from the UK Charities Commission to do so, and we intend to open also a branch office in Vilnius, Lithuania.
That's what I was going to ask you about next, because I know they have a Yiddish program there, and I was wondering if YIVO had ever kind of gone back home. Anyway, I'm very interested in your online educational series, which I guess is fairly new. Could you tell us about how and when it came into being?
Well, when I became director of YIVO about 7.5 years ago, I realized that, first of all, what an immense treasure this institute was to the Jewish people everywhere, not just in the United States, but the East European Jewry and its diaspora is all over the world, and that nobody had access to the materials that we have in our archive. When I was at Yale University Press, I started a project called the Annals of Communism, and we published materials from the Soviet archives pertaining to the history of Soviet communism from the revolution to Stalin's death. And it ended with our digitizing Stalin's personal archive. And when I came to YIVO, I realized that we should do something similar here, because this is the treasure house of materials. And at the same time this became a pressing concern for me, I also realized that the history of the Jews of Eastern Europe was something that actually wasn't really being taught anywhere. I looked at the curricula of Stanford and of Yale and of Harvard and of NYU and of Yeshiva University and Brandeis and Columbia and of numerous places, numerous very important schools throughout the United States. And what I found everywhere was that Jewish studies, so-called, was largely rabbinics and the ancient period. Then we would skip to maybe one course on Eastern Europe. And then there came the Holocaust. And then there came Israel and America. But the 1,000 years that Jews spent in Eastern Europe was being reduced to one course. And that one course pertaining to Eastern Europe usually had to do with the end of the 19th century, which was all that really interested people for the most part. Whereas the medieval period and rabbinics and Israel and the Holocaust, this is what occupied most of the space. And it seemed to me that there was a huge amount of our history that simply was still being obscured to ourselves. And so I started something called the Winter Program here at YIVO, which was to complement our summer program in teaching the Yiddish language. And this was to get scholars from top universities and colleges to come to YIVO and give a three-week course on some aspect of this thousand-year history. And so we have had courses, for instance, on Polish-Jewish relations in the 18th century. And when we gave that class, I told the instructor that I thought she was out of her mind, producing for her class a course pack that was about 6 inches thick with materials in Latin and in Polish and in German and in Yiddish and in Hebrew and all these languages. I said, Magda, I will be so shocked if you even get three people to take your class. It was so popular that the students beseeched her to come once a week throughout the rest of the year to meet with them and to continue the class after it was formally over. And she did that. And so Magda Teeter gave this course. Sam Kassow gave a course called An Introduction to the History of Ashkenaz. And again, it was so popular, and he's given it several times in our winter program, that I kept thinking to myself, you know, it would be wonderful. We're getting 20, 25 people. That's the maximum we could have for such a class. But I kept thinking, why can't we find a way of making this available to people around the world? And unfortunately, we didn't have the means to undertake an online class. But then out of the blue, we were approached by the Shine Trust from Los Angeles. And they were looking to help fund something in the area of education, Jewish education. And they found our winter program on the internet. And Mr. Richmond of the Shine Trust wanted to know what it was. And we talked about it. We went back and forth. And I suggested that perhaps we could do an online version of it. And he loved this idea. And that was the origin of Sam Kassow's Discovering Ashkenaz. And when we produced that class, I said to Mr. Richmond, I thought we'd be very happy, very lucky if we had 500 people around the world to take it. And it turned out we had 3,500 people.
Wow. I took the course. I took the course and I really liked it. Could you tell our listeners briefly a little bit about it, the content, the materials, the structure, how long the course is and how it works?
Right. Well, the idea behind the course is to give as broad an overview as possible, and using as much material from the YIVO archives as we can, not simply to call attention to YIVO, but to make use of the actual material culture of the Jewish people. And so it's a 6-week program. I believe it's a 6-week program. At this point, I can't even remember, but it's a 6-week program of 2-hour lectures each. And Sam Kassow delivers a series of lectures that leads you from the beginning of Jewish settlement in Ashkenaz through the 20th century. And there it is. It's, you know, there's nothing like it.
Something that I liked about it was the fact that you could watch him lecture, but you could also read what he was saying, because I'm much better at reading than I am at listening to learn something. And I think that if there are people in other countries who, for example, may not have English as their first language, it's definitely helpful to be able to have that support. So I thought that was a very good thing.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. What we're doing now is translating his lecture into Lithuanian for our Lithuanian colleagues and the remnant of Jews in Lithuania, about 3,000. But we're also going to translate it into Polish for the Poles, and I hope into Russian eventually as well. to reach as many people as we can.
Now, you said that 3,500 people took this course. Do you have any idea of who they were, where they were, their ages or professions or something?
They were from every state in the United States, including Idaho, including Hawaii, including Alaska, and they were from 50 countries around the world, all of the European countries, Italy, Spain, England, Germany, and so forth, but also from Poland, Lithuania, Ukraine, Belarus, Russia, from Hungary, from Czech Republic, from China, from South Africa, from Uganda.
Wow.
And Israel, of course, and Canada, and from several countries in Latin America, from Mexico, is quite, from Japan, quite amazing. And the Shine Trust was so delighted by this that it has now agreed to help fund a whole set of classes in various areas of East European Jewish history and culture, including the new one that is going to come online soon on the subject of Jewish folklore of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that one. Will the structure be more or less like the other one, or will it
be? Well, it's truly going to be a little bit different because of the nature of the class. We want to include as much material culture as we possibly can. And so we're delaying the launch of the class a little bit so that we can add more music and more visuals to the presentation that the instructor, Itzik Gottesman, is.
When I took the Discovering Ashkenaz course, it began in January of 2016 and was supposed to end in April, but then it was extended through August. And the folklore course is supposed to begin on November 1st. Is it possible to register for them after they begin? Is the Discovering Ashkenaz course still available to people, for example?
Yes, it is still available, and there are new people signing up for it. The only change is that we are now charging a modest fee to take the class. And I understand perfectly well that while the fee of $60 is not that much in America, it's a month's salary to somebody in Ukraine. And so we're trying to find a way of adjusting the fee schedule so that people in Ukraine and Russia and China and so forth will be able to take this class as well.
When I took the class, there were certain times when there was an online interaction with the teacher that you could ask questions and the teacher answered. If people can sign up for the course at any time and kind of do it at their own pace, is this something that you're still going to have? I mean, is it going to have dates so that this feature is still there? Or can people just do it whenever they want to do it?
People will be able to sign up whenever they want to sign up for the class, but there will be specific dates when there will be actual interaction with the instructor. So that's something that people, we're going to post that information online, and people may want to, you know, schedule their taking the class so that it can somehow coordinate with discussions with the instructors. But we're going to have instructor discussions on a rolling basis so that if you miss it in November, you can catch up maybe in February, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. You had mentioned other courses. Do you have any idea of what other courses you'll give in the future?
Well, we want to, as I said, we're launching this one on folklore. Then we're going to have one on Yiddish language and literature. Then we're going to have one on Yiddish humor.
Will those be taught in Yiddish?
They won't be given in Yiddish. They'll be given in English, but there will certainly be a lot of Yiddish in them.
Mm-hmm.
And where Yiddish is used, we will, of course, provide super titles or subtitles or translations as necessary. We want to do a class on Jewish music of Eastern Europe. That is not just klezmer music, but includes art music and a whole variety, and as well as liturgical music. We want to do a class on literature, on music. You know, we may decide that we're going to do something specifically on, say, the Russian Revolution and the Jewish world of Eastern Europe. Maybe a course on a subject that I know a lot of people are very interested in, which is the subject of the history of pogroms in this area. So we're working on a lot of ideas right now. Another subject that I think is absolutely fascinating that most people know so very little about is Jewish participation in the avant-garde artistic movements of Eastern Europe and Russia in the 19th and 20th centuries. It's fantastically interesting how many Jews were involved in, for instance, Russian futurism, in Dada, in the creation of the modern world in so many of its different aspects, including ballet, architecture, and so forth. And so there are a lot of possibilities.
This is very exciting, but I'm afraid that we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.